This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents A Beautiful Wedding by Jamie McGuire. Read by Emma Galvin and Zachary Weber.
If I was drowning, you would part the sea and risk your own life to rescue me. From John Bon Jovi, Thank You for Loving Me. Chapter 1. Alibi. Abby. I could feel it coming, a growing persistent unease that crept just beneath my skin. The more I tried to ignore it, the more unbearable it became. An itch that needed to be scratched. A scream bubbling to the surface. My father said that the urgent need to run when things were about to go wrong was like a tick, a defense mechanism inherent in the Abernathys. I'd felt it moments before the fire, and I was feeling it now. Sitting in Travis's bedroom, just hours after the fire, my heart raced and my muscles twitched. My gut pulled me toward the door. Told me to leave, to get away, anywhere but here. But for the first time in my life, I didn't want to go alone. I could barely focus on that voice I loved so much, describing how afraid he was of losing me, and how he was close to escaping when he ran in the opposite direction toward me. So many people died, some of them strangers from state, but some were people I'd seen in the cafeteria, in class, at other fights. We somehow survived, and were sitting alone in his apartment, trying to process it all, feeling afraid, feeling guilty, about those who died, and that we had lived. My lungs felt like they were full of cobwebs and flames, and I couldn't get the rancid smell of charred skin out of my nose. It was overpowering, and even though I'd taken a shower, it was still there, mixed in with the mint and lavender scent of the soap I used to scrub it away. Equally unforgettable were the sounds, the sirens, the wailing, the worried and panicked chatter, and the screams of people arriving on the scene to discover that a friend was still inside. Everyone looked the same, covered in soot, with identical expressions of bewilderment and despair. It was a nightmare. Despite my struggle to focus, I did hear him say this. The only thing I'm afraid of is a life without you, Pigeon. We had been too lucky. Even in a dark corner of Vegas, being attacked by Benny's goons, we somehow still had the advantage. Travis was invincible, but being a part of the circle and helping to organize a fight in unsafe conditions that resulted in the deaths of countless college kids, that was a fight not even Travis Maddox could win. A relationship had withstood so many things, but Travis was in real danger of going to prison. Even if he didn't know it yet, it was the one obstacle that could keep us apart. The one obstacle that we had no control over. Then you have nothing to be afraid of, I said. We're forever. He sighed, and then pressed his lips against my hair. I didn't think it was possible to feel so much for one person. He had protected me. It was my turn to protect him. This is it, he said. What? I knew the second I met you that there was something about you I needed. Turns out, it wasn't something about you at all. It was just you. My insides melted. I loved him. I loved him. And I had to do whatever I could to keep him safe. Whatever it took, no matter how crazy. All I had to do was talk him into it. I leaned against him, pressing my cheek against his chest. It's us, Trav. Nothing makes sense unless we're together. Have you noticed that?
Noticed?
I've been telling you that all year. It's official. Bimbos, fights, leaving, Parker. Vegas, even fires. Our relationship can withstand anything.
Vegas? I asked.
In that moment, the most insane plan formed in my mind. But the idea made sense as I stared into his warm brown eyes. Those eyes made everything make sense. His face and neck were still covered in soot mixed with sweat, a reminder of how close we had come to losing everything. My mind was racing. We would only need necessities, and we could be out the door in 5 minutes. We could buy clothes there. The sooner we left, the better. No one would believe two people would get on a plane right after such an enormous tragedy. It didn't make sense, which was exactly why we had to do it. I had to take Travis far enough away, for a specific reason. Something believable, even if it was crazy. Luckily, crazy wasn't that far a leap for Travis and me, and it was possible the investigators would second-guess the dozens of witnesses who saw Travis fighting in the basement of Keaton Hall that night, if they had proof that we were in Vegas hours later getting married. It was absolutely insane, but I didn't know what else to do. I didn't have time to come up with a better plan. We should already be gone. Travis was staring back at me expectantly, waiting to unconditionally accept whatever came out of my crazy mouth. God damn it. I couldn't lose him now. Not after everything we'd fought through to get to this moment. By anyone's standards, we were too young to get married. Too unpredictable. How many times had we hurt one another along the way, screamed at each other 1 minute, and fallen into bed together the next? But we'd just seen how fragile life was. Who knew when the end would come along and sweep one of us away? I looked at him, resolute. He was mine, and I was his. If I knew anything at all, it was that only those two things mattered. He furrowed his brow.
Yeah?
Have you thought about going back?
His eyebrows shot up.
I don't think that's a good idea for me.
Weeks ago, I'd broken his heart. Travis chasing America's car when he realized it was over was still fresh in my mind. He was going to fight for Benny in Vegas, and I wouldn't go back there. Not even for him. He had gone through hell while we were apart. He'd begged me back, on his knees, and I was so set on never returning to my life in Nevada, I'd walked away. I'd be a complete asshole if I asked him to go back. I half expected him to tell me to get the hell out for even mentioning it. But this was the only plan I had, and I was desperate.
What if we just went for a night?
A night was all I needed. We just needed to be somewhere else. He looked around his bedroom, searching the darkness for what he thought I wanted to hear. I didn't want to be that girl, the one who wasn't forthcoming and caused a huge, stupid misunderstanding. But I couldn't tell Travis the truth about what I'd just proposed to him. He would never agree to go.
A night?
He clearly had no clue how to respond. He probably thought it was a test. But the only thing I wanted was for him to say yes. Marry me, I blurted out. His mouth parted, forming a silent gasp. I waited lifetimes until his lips curved upward, and he sealed his mouth on mine. His kiss screamed 1,000 different emotions. My brain felt swollen with warring thoughts of relief and panic. This was going to work. We would get married. Travis would have an alibi, and everything would be okay. Oh, hell. Damn. Shit. Fuck. I was getting married.
Travis. Abby Abernathy was famous for one thing, having no tell. She could commit a crime and smile like it was any other day, lie without a twitch in her eye. Only one person in the world had any chance of learning her tell, and that one person had to figure it out if he wanted to have any chance with her. Me. Abby had lost her childhood, and I'd lost my mom. So for two people who struggled to get on the same page, we were the same story. That gave me an edge, and after making this my goal over the past months, I'd arrived at an answer. Abby's tell was not having one. It might not make sense to most people, but it made perfect sense to me. It was the absence of that tell that gave her away. The peace in her eyes, The softness in her smile, the relaxation of her shoulders alerted me that something was wrong. If I didn't know her better, I might have thought this was just our happy ending, but she was up to something. Sitting in the terminal, waiting to board a plane to Vegas, with Abby snuggled into the curve of my body, I knew it was easy to try to ignore. She kept lifting her hand, staring at the ring I bought her, and sighing. The middle-aged woman across from us was watching my new fiancé and smiled, probably fantasizing about a time when she had her whole life ahead of her. She didn't know what those sighs really meant, but I had an idea. It was hard to be happy about what we were about to do with the cloud of so many deaths hanging above our heads. No, really, it was literally above our heads. A television on the wall displayed the local news. Footage of the fire and the latest updates scrolled across the screen. They interviewed Josh Varney. He was covered in soot, and he looked horrible, but I was glad to see he'd made it. He was fairly hammered when I saw him before the fight. Most of the people who came to the circle either came drunk or worked their way up to a buzz while they waited for me and my opponent to trade blows. When the flames began to crawl across the room, adrenaline pumped into everyone's veins, enough to sober up even the most intoxicated. I wished it hadn't happened. We'd lost so many, and this wasn't exactly something you'd want your wedding to follow. From experience, I knew that the memory of a tragedy could be misplaced. Attaching this date to something we would celebrate year after year would keep it front and center in our minds. Damn, they were still bringing out bodies, and I was acting like this was an annoyance. There were parents out there who had no idea they'd never see their kids again. That selfish thought led to guilt, and that guilt led to a lie. It was a sheer miracle that we were getting married right now anyway, but I didn't want Abby thinking I was anything but super fucking pumped about getting married. Knowing her, she'd misread it and then change her mind. So I focused on her and what we were about to do. I wanted to be a normal, so excited I might puke groom-to-be, and she deserved nothing less. It wouldn't be the first time I'd pretended not to care about something I couldn't get out of my head. The living proof was snuggled up next to me. On the television screen, the anchor woman standing outside Keaton Hall held the microphone with both hands, a frown line between her eyebrows. What the families of the victims will be asking, who is to blame? Back to you, Kent. Suddenly, the nausea became real. So many had died. Of course they were going to hold someone accountable. Was it Adam's fault? Would he go to prison? Would I? I hugged Abby to me and kissed her hair. A woman behind a desk picked up a mic and began to speak, and my knees started to bounce uncontrollably. If we weren't going to board soon, I might pick up Abby and run to Vegas. I felt like I could have made it there before the plane. The airline agent instructed us about boarding the flight, her voice rising and falling with the scripted announcement she'd probably read a million times. She sounded like the teacher in those Peanuts cartoons, bored, monotone, and impossible to understand. The only thing that made sense were the thoughts on repeat inside my head. I was about to become the husband of the second woman I'd ever loved. It was almost time. Damn. Shit, yeah. Fuck, yes. I was getting married.
Chapter 2. The Way Back. Abby. I stared at the sparkling rock on my finger and sighed again. It wasn't an airy sigh a young, newly engaged girl might make while staring at her rather large diamond. It was full of thought. A heavy, thoughtful thought that made me think heavier, thoughtful thoughts. But not second thoughts. We couldn't stay away from each other. What we were about to do was inevitable, and Travis Maddox loved me in a way most people dreamed about. The sigh was filled with worry and hope for my stupid plan. I wanted Travis to be okay so much that it was nearly tangible. Stop that, Pidge, Travis said. You're making me nervous. It's just too big. It fits just fine, he said, sitting back. We were wedged between a businessman talking softly on his cell phone and an elderly couple. An airline employee was standing behind the gate desk, talking into what looked like a CB radio. I wondered why they didn't just use a regular microphone. She announced a few names,
and then hooked the device somewhere on the back of her desk. Must be a full flight, Travis said. His left arm was settled on the back of my chair, his thumb gently rubbing my shoulder. He was trying to pretend to be relaxed, but his bobbing knee gave him away. The diamond is excessive. I feel like I'm going to get mugged at any moment, I said. Travis laughed. First of all, no one is going to fucking touch you. Second, that ring was made to be on your finger. I knew when I saw it. Attention, passengers of American Flight 2477 to Las Vegas. We are looking for 3 volunteers to take a later flight. We're offering travel vouchers good for 1 year from your departure. Travis looked at me. No. You in a hurry? He asked, a smug smile on his face. I leaned in and kissed him. Actually, I am. I reached up with my finger and wiped away the smudge of soot under his nose that he'd missed in the shower. Thanks, baby, he said, squeezing me against his side. He looked around, his chin lifted, his eyes bright. He was in the best mood I'd seen him in since the night he'd won our bet. It made me smile. Sensible or not, it felt good to be loved so much, and I decided right then and there I would stop apologizing for it. There were worse things than finding her soulmate too early in life. And what was too early, anyway? I had a discussion about you with my mom once, Travis said, looking out the wall of windows to our left. It was still dark. Whatever he saw wasn't on the other side. About me? Isn't that kind of impossible? Not really. It was the day she died. Adrenaline burst from where adrenaline bursts from and sped through my body, pooling in my fingers and toes. Travis had never spoken about his mother to me. I often wanted to ask him about her, but then I thought about the sickening feeling that came over me when someone asked me about my mother, so I never did. He continued. She told me to find a girl worth fighting for. The one that doesn't come easy. I felt a little embarrassed, wondering if that meant I was a huge pain in the ass. Truthfully, I was. But that wasn't the point. She said to never stop fighting, and I didn't. She was right. He took a deep breath, seeming to let that thought settle into his bones. The idea that Travis believed I was the woman who his mother was talking about, that she would approve of me, made me feel an acceptance I'd never felt before. Diane, who had passed away almost 17 years before, now made me feel more loved than my own mother. I love your mom, I said, leaning against Travis's chest. He looked down at me, and after a short pause, kissed my hair. I couldn't see his face, but I could hear in his voice how much he was affected. She would have loved you too. No doubt in my mind. The woman spoke into her CB again. Attention, passengers of American Flight 2477 to Las Vegas. We will begin boarding soon. We'll start with anyone needing boarding assistance and those with young children, and then we'll begin boarding first class and business class. How about exceptionally tired? Travis said, standing. I need a fucking Red Bull. Maybe we should have kept our tickets for tomorrow like we'd planned. I raised an eyebrow. You have a problem with me being in a hurry to be Mrs. Travis Maddox? He shook his head, helping me to my feet. Hell no. I'm still in shock, if you want to know the truth. I just don't want you to be rushing because you're afraid you'll change your mind. Maybe I'm afraid you'll change your mind. Travis's eyebrows pulled in, and he wrapped his arms around me. You can't really think that. You gotta know there's nothing I want more. I rose up on the balls of my feet and pecked his lips. I think we're getting ready to board a plane for Vegas, so we can get married. That's what I think. Travis squeezed me against him, and then kissed me excitedly from cheek to collarbone. I giggled as he tickled my neck, and laughed even louder when he lifted me off the ground. He kissed me one last time before taking my bag off the floor, lowered me to the ground, and then led me by the hand to the line. We showed our boarding passes and walked down the jetway hand in hand. The flight attendants took one look at us and offered a knowing smile. Travis passed our seats to let me by, placed our carry-on bags in the overhead bin, and collapsed next to me.
We should probably try to sleep on the way. But I'm not sure I can. I'm too fucking amped.
You just said you needed a Red Bull. His dimple caved as he smiled.
Stop listening to everything I say. I'm probably not going to make sense for the next 6 months while I try to process the fact that I've gotten everything I've ever wanted.
I leaned back to meet his eyes. Trav, if you wonder why I'm in such a hurry to marry you, what you just said is one of the many reasons why.
Yeah?
Yeah. He scooted down in his seat, and then laid his head on my shoulder, nuzzling my neck a few times before relaxing. I touched my lips to his forehead, and then looked out the window, waiting as the other passengers passed by, and silently praying for the pilot to hurry the hell out of there. I'd never been so thankful for my unrivaled poker face. I wanted to stand up and scream for everyone to sit down and for the pilot to get us off the ground, but I forbid myself to even fidget and willed my muscles to relax. Travis's fingers found their way to mine and intertwined with them. His breath heated up the spot it touched on my shoulder, sending warmth throughout my body. Sometimes I just wanted to drown in him. I thought about what might happen if my plan didn't work. Travis being arrested, tried in court, and the worst-case scenario, being sent to prison. Knowing it was possible to be separated from him for a very long time, I felt that a promise to be with him forever didn't seem like enough. My eyes filled with tears, and one escaped, falling down my cheek. I wiped it away quickly. Damn, fatigue always made me more emotional. The other passengers were stowing their bags and buckling their seatbelts, going through the motions with no idea that our lives were about to change forever. I turned to look out the window. Anything to get my mind off the urgency to get off the ground. Hurry, I whispered.
Travis. It was easy to relax when I rested my head in the crook of Abby's neck. Her hair still smelled a little bit like smoke, and her hands were still pink and swollen from trying to force the basement window open. I tried to push that image from my head. The soot smudges on her face, her frightened eyes red and irritated from the smoke, emphasized by the smeared black mascara surrounding them. If I hadn't stayed behind, she might not have made it. Life without Abby didn't sound like much of a life at all. I didn't want to even wonder what losing her would be like. Going from a nightmare situation to one I'd dreamed about was a jarring experience, but lying there against Abby as the plane hummed and the flight attendant deadpanned the announcements over the PA system made for a somewhat easier transition. I reached for Abby's fingers, lacing mine with hers, her cheek pressed against the top of my head so subtly that if I'd been paying attention to what string to pull to trigger the automatic inflation of my life vest, I might have missed her tiny display of affection. In just a few months' time, the petite woman next to me had become my whole world. I fantasized about how beautiful she would be in her wedding dress, returning home to watch Abby make the apartment her own, buying our first car, and doing those everyday boring things that married people did, like the dishes and grocery shopping, together. I imagined watching her walk across the stage at her graduation. After we both found jobs, we would likely start a family. That was just 3 or 4 years away. We both had broken homes, but I knew Abby would be a damn good mother. I thought about how I would react when she broke the news to me of being pregnant, and I already felt a little emotional about it. It wouldn't all be sunshine and rainbows, but struggling through a rough patch was when we were at our best, and we'd had enough rough patches to know we could get through them. With thoughts of a future in which Abby was swollen with our first child running through my mind, my body relaxed against the itchy airplane seat, and I fell asleep. What was I doing here? The smell of smoke burned my nose, and the cries and screaming in the distance made my blood turn to ice, even though sweat was pouring down my face. I was back in the bowels of Keaton Hall. Pigeon! I yelled. I coughed and squinted my eyes as if that would help me see through the darkness. Pigeon! I'd felt this feeling before, the panic, the pure adrenaline of being truly afraid of dying. Death was just moments away, but I didn't think about what it would feel like to suffocate or burn alive. I only thought about Abby, Where was she? Was she okay? How would I save her? A single door came into view, highlighted by the approaching flames. I turned the knob and pushed into the 10x10 room. It was just four walls of concrete blocks, one window. A small group of girls and a couple of guys were against the far wall, trying to reach for their only escape. Derek, one of my frat brothers, was holding up one of the girls, and she was desperately reaching for the window. "Can you get it, Lindsay?" he grunted, breathing hard.
"No, I can't reach it,"
she cried, clawing above her. She was wearing a pink Sigma Kappa t-shirt, damp from sweat. Derek nodded to his friend. I didn't know his name, but he was in my humanities class.
"Lift Emily, Todd, she's taller."
Todd bent over and laced his fingers together, but Emily had flattened herself against the wall, frozen with fear. "Emily, get over here." Her face compressed. She looked like a little girl.
"I want my mom," she whimpered.
"Get the fuck over here," Todd commanded. After taking a tiny moment to find her courage, Emily pushed away from the wall and climbed onto Todd. He pushed her up, but she couldn't reach it either. Lainey watched her friend reach for the window, noticed the approaching flames, and then balled her hands into fists at her chest. She squeezed them so tight they shook.
"Keep trying, Emily."
"Let's try another way," I said, but they didn't hear me. Maybe they'd already tried several routes, and this was the only window they could find. I ran into the dark hallway and looked around. This was the dead end. We had nowhere else to run. I went back in, trying to think of something to save us. Dusty sheets covered stored furniture that lined the walls, and the fire was using them as a pathway. A pathway straight to the room we were in. I backed up a few steps and then turned to face the kids behind me. Their eyes widened and they retreated against the wall. Lainey was trying to climb up the cement blocks out of pure terror.
"Have you seen Abby Abernathy?"
I said. They didn't hear me.
"Hey!"
I yelled again. None of those kids acknowledged me. I walked up to Derek and screamed at him.
"Hey!"
He looked right through me at the fire, a horrified look on his face. I looked at the others. They didn't see me either. Confused, I walked over to the wall and jumped, trying to reach the window, and then I was kneeling on the ground outside, looking in. Derek, Todd, Lainey, Lindsay, and Emily were still inside. I tried to open the window, but it wouldn't budge. I kept trying anyway, hoping at any moment it would pop open and I could pull them out.
"Hold on,"
I yelled.
"Help!"
I yelled again, hoping someone would hear. The girls hugged and Emily began to wail.
"This is just a bad dream. This is just a bad dream. Wake up, wake up,"
she said over and over.
"Get one of the sheets, Lainey,"
Derek said.
"Roll it up and shove it under the door."
Lainey scrambled to pull a sheet off a desk. Lindsay helped her and then watched Lainey shove it desperately under the door. They both backed away, watching the door.
"We're trapped,"
Todd said to Derek. Derek's shoulders fell. Lainey walked over to him, and he touched her dirty cheeks with both hands. They stared into each other's eyes. Thick, black smoke snaked under the door and seeped into the room. Emily jumped for the window.
"Lift me up, Todd. I want out. I want out of here."
Todd watched her jump with a defeated expression on his face.
"Mommy,"
Emily screamed.
"Mommy, help me."
Her eyes were trained on the window, but she still looked past me. Lindsay reached out for Emily, but she wouldn't be touched.
"Shh,"
she said, trying to comfort her from where she stood. She covered her mouth with her hands and began to cough. She looked at Todd, tears streaming down her face.
"We're going to die." "I don't want to die,"
Emily screamed, still jumping. As the smoke filled the room, I punched the window over and over. The adrenaline must have been unbelievable because I couldn't feel my hand hitting the glass, even though I was using every bit of strength I had.
"Help me! Help!"
I yelled, but no one came. Smoke bumped and swirled against the window, and the coughs and crying silenced. My eyes popped open, and I looked around. I was on the plane with Abby, my hands clenching the armrests, and every muscle in my body clenched.
Travis, you're sweating,
Abby said. She touched my cheek. I'll be right back, I said, quickly unbuckling my seatbelt. I rushed to the back of the plane and jerked open the lavatory door, and then locked it behind me. Flipping up the sink lever, I splashed water on my face, and then stared into the mirror, watching the drops of water slide off my face and onto the counter. They were there because of me. I knew Keaton wasn't safe, and I knew too many people were in that basement, and I let it happen. I contributed to dozens of deaths, and now I was on a plane to Las Vegas. What the fuck was wrong with me? I walked back to my seat and buckled in next to Abby. She stared at me, noticing right away that something was wrong.
What?
It's my fault. She shook her head and kept her voice low.
No, don't do that.
I should have said no. I should have insisted on a safer place.
You didn't know that was going to happen.
She glanced around, making sure no one was listening.
It's awful, it's horrific, but we couldn't stop it. We can't change it.
What if I get arrested, Abby? What if I go to jail?
Shh,
she said, reminding me of the way Lindsay tried to comfort Emily in my dream.
It won't happen, she whispered.
Her eyes were focused, resolute. Maybe it should.
Chapter 3. Lucky One. Abby. When the wheels of the airplane touched down on the runway of McCarran International Airport, Travis was finally relaxed and leaning on my shoulder. The bright lights of Las Vegas had been visible for the past 10 minutes, signaling us like a beacon toward everything I hated and everything I wanted. Travis roused slowly, glancing out the window quickly, before kissing the cusp of my shoulder.
We're here?
Viva. I thought maybe you'd go back to sleep. It's going to be a long day.
There's no way I was going back to sleep after that dream, he said, stretching. I'm not sure I want to sleep again.
My fingers squeezed his. I hated to see him so shaken. He wouldn't talk about his dream, but it didn't take much to figure out where he was while he was sleeping. I wondered if anyone that had escaped from Keaton would be able to close their eyes without seeing the smoke and the panicked faces. The plane arrived at the gate, the seatbelt light dinged, and the cabin lights came on, signaling everyone to stand up and dig for their carry-on luggage. Everyone was in a hurry, even though no one was getting out of there before the people seated ahead of them. I sat, feigning patience, watching Travis stand to pull out our luggage. His t-shirt rose when he reached up, revealing his abs, shifting, and then contracting when he pulled down the bags.
You got a dress in here?
I shook my head. I thought I'd find one here. He nodded once.
Yeah, I bet they have plenty to choose from. A better selection for a Vegas wedding than home.
My line of thinking exactly. Travis held out his hand and helped me take the 2 steps to the aisle.
You'll look great no matter what you put on.
I kissed his cheek and took my bag just as the line began to move. We followed the other passengers down the gateway and into the terminal.
Deja vu, Travis whispered.
I felt the same. The slot machines sung their siren song and flashed brightly colored lights, falsely promising luck and big money. The last time Travis and I were here, it was easy to pick out the couples who were getting married, and I wondered if we were just as obvious. Travis took my hand as we passed baggage claim, and then followed the sign marked taxis. The automatic doors parted, and we walked into the desert night air. It was still stifling hot and dry. I breathed in the heat, letting Las Vegas saturate every part of me. Marrying Travis would be the hardest, easiest thing I'd ever done. I needed to awaken the parts of me that were molded in the darkest corners of this city to make my plan work. If Travis thought that I was doing this for any reason other than just wanting to commit to him, he would never let me go through with it. And Travis was not exactly gullible. And worse, he knew me better than anyone else. He knew what I was capable of. If I pulled the wedding off and kept Travis out of prison without him knowing why,
It would be my best bluff yet. Even though we'd bypassed the crowd waiting for baggage, there was a long line for taxis. I sighed. We should have been getting married by now. It was still dark, but it had been over 5 hours since the fire. We couldn't afford more lines.
Pidge? Travis squeezed my hand. You okay?
Yeah, I said, shaking my head and smiling. Why?
You seem a little tense.
I took stock of my body, how I was standing, my facial expression, anything that might tip him off. My shoulders were so tight, they were hanging up around my ears, so I forced them to relax.
I'm just ready.
To get it over with? He asked, his eyebrows pulling in infinitesimally. Had I not known better, I would have never caught it.
Trav,
I said, wrapping my arms around his waist.
This was my idea, remember?
So was the last time we went to Vegas. You remember how that turned out? I laughed, and then I felt terrible. The vertical line his eyebrow formed when he pushed them together deepened. This was so important to him. How much he loved me was overwhelming most of the time. But tonight was different.
I'm in a hurry, yes.
Aren't you?
Yes,
but something's off.
You're just nervous. Stop worrying.
His face smoothed, and he hugged me.
Okay. If you say you're okay, then I believe you.
15 long minutes later, and we were at the front of the line. A taxi pulled to the curb and stopped. Travis opened the door for me, and I ducked into the back seat and slid over, waiting for him to get in. The cab driver looked over his shoulder.
Short trip?
Travis situated our single carry-on bag in front of him on the floorboard.
We travel light.
Bellagio, please, I said calmly, keeping the urgency out of my voice. With lyrics I didn't understand, a cheery circus-like melody hummed through the speakers as we drove from the airport to the strip. The lights were visible miles before we reached the hotel. When we arrived at the strip, I noticed a river of people trekking up and down the sides of the road. Even in the wee hours of the morning, the sidewalks were packed with bachelors, women pushing strollers with sleeping babies, people in costumes taking pictures for tips, and businessmen, apparently looking to unwind. Travis put his arm around my shoulders. I leaned against him, trying not to look at my watch for the 10th time. The taxi pulled into the circle drive of the Bellagio, and Travis leaned forward with bills to pay the driver. He then pulled out our roller carry-on and waited for me. I scooted out, taking his hand and stepping out onto the concrete. As if it weren't in the early AM, people were standing in the taxi line to go to a different casino, and others were returning, weaving and laughing after a long night of drinking. Travis squeezed my hand.
We're really here.
Yep, I said, pulling him inside. The ceiling was distractingly ornate. Everybody in the lobby was standing around with their noses in the air.
What are you?
I said, turning to Travis. He was letting me pull him while he took in the ceiling.
Look, Pidge, it's... Wow,
he said, in awe of the huge multicolored flowers kissing the ceiling. Yep, I said, tugging him to the front desk.
Checking in, I said, and we need to schedule a wedding at a local chapel.
Which one? The man asked. Anyone? A nice one? A 24-hour one? We can arrange that. I'll just get you checked in here, and then the concierge can help you with a wedding chapel, shows, anything you'd like.
Great,
I said, turning to Travis with a triumphant grin. He was still staring at the ceiling.
Travis,
I said, pulling on his arm. He turned, snapping out of his hypnotic state.
Yeah?
Can you go over to the concierge and get the wedding scheduled?
Yeah?
I mean,
yeah.
I can do that.
Which one?
I laughed once.
Close.
Open all night. Classy.
Got it,
he said. He pecked my cheek before pulling the carry-on to the concierge desk.
We're under Maddox, I said, pulling out a piece of paper. This is our confirmation number?
Ah, yes. I have a honeymoon suite available if you'd like to upgrade. I shook my head. We're good. Travis was across the room, talking with a man behind the desk. They were looking at a brochure together, and he had a huge smile on his face while the man pointed out the different venues.
Please let this work, I said, under my breath.
What was that, ma'am?
Oh, nothing, I said,
as he returned to clicking away on his computer.
Travis. Abby leaned in with a smile when I kissed her cheek, and then continued with check-in while I popped over to the concierge to nail down a chapel. I glanced over at my soon-to-be wife, her long legs propped up by those wedge-heel shoes that make a nice pair of legs look even nicer. Her flowy, thin shirt was just see-through enough that I felt disappointed to see a tank top under it. Her favorite sunglasses were perched on the front of her favorite fedora, and just a few long locks of her caramel hair, a little wavy from drying naturally after her shower, were cascading out from under the hat. My God, that woman was fucking sexy. She didn't even have to try, and all I wanted was to be all up in her business. Now that we were engaged, that didn't sound like such a bastard thing to think. Sir, the concierge said. Oh, yeah, hey, I said, taking a last glance at Abby before giving the guy my full attention. I need a chapel. Open all night. Classy. He smiled. Of course, sir, we have several for you right here at the Bellagio. They are absolutely beautiful, and you don't happen to have Elvis at a chapel here, do you? I figure if we're going to get married in Vegas, we should either get married by Elvis, or at least invite him, you know? No, sir, I apologize. The Bellagio chapels do not offer an Elvis impersonator. However, I can find you a few numbers for you to call and request that one appear at your wedding. There is also, of course, the world-famous Graceland Chapel, if you prefer. They have packages that include an Elvis impersonator. Classy? I'm sure you'll be very pleased. Okay, that one, as quickly as possible. The concierge smiled. In a hurry, are we? I started to grin, but I realized I was already smiling, and probably had been like an idiot since I arrived at his desk. Do you see that girl over there? He glanced at her, quickly, respectfully. I liked him. Yes, sir. You're a lucky man. I sure as shit am. Schedule the wedding for 2, maybe 3 hours from now. She'll need time to pick up a few things and get ready. Very thoughtful of you, sir. He clicked a few buttons on his keyboard and then grabbed the mouse, moving it around and clicking it a few times. His smile faded as he concentrated, and then it lit up his face again when he finished. The printer buzzed, and then he handed me a piece of paper. There you are, sir. Congratulations. He held up his fist, and I bumped it, feeling like he'd just handed me a winning lottery ticket. Chapter 4. 3 hours. Travis. Abby held my hand, pulling me along as we walked through the casino to the elevators. I was dragging my feet, trying to take a look around before we went upstairs. It had only been a few months since the last time we'd been in Vegas, but this time was less stressful. We were here for a much better reason. Regardless, Abby was still all business, refusing to pause long enough for me to get too comfortable around the tables. She hated Las Vegas, and with good reason, which made me question even more why she chose to come here. But as long as she was on a mission to be my wife, I wasn't going to argue. Trav, she said, huffing. The elevators are right there. She tugged on me a few times toward her final destination. We're on vacation, Pidge. Cool your jets. No, we're getting married, and we have less than 24 hours to get it done. I pressed the button, pulling us both into an open space to the side of the crowd. It shouldn't have been surprising that there were so many people just ending their night this close to sunrise, but even a buck-wild frat boy like myself could be impressed here. I still can't believe it, I said. I brought her fingers to my mouth and kissed them. Abby was still looking above the elevator doors, watching the numbers descend. You've mentioned that. She looked over to me and one corner of her mouth turned up. Believe it, baby. We're here. My chest rose while my lungs filled with air, preparing to let out a long sigh. In recent memory, or maybe ever, my bones and muscles had never been so relaxed. My mind was at ease. It felt strange to feel all of those things, knowing what we'd just left behind back on campus, and at the same time feeling so responsible. It was disorienting and unsettling, this feeling happy one minute and like a criminal the next. A slit formed between the elevator doors, and then they slowly slid away from each other, allowing the passengers to bleed out into the hallway. Abby and I stepped on together with our small roller duffel bag. One woman had a large purse, a large carry-on that was the size of two of ours, and a four-wheeled vertical suitcase that could fit at least two small children. "Moving here?" I asked. "That's cool." Abby jammed her elbow into my ribs. She took a long look at me, and then Abby, and then spoke in a French accent. "Non." She looked away, clearly unhappy I'd spoken to her. Abby and I traded glances, and then she widened her eyes, silently saying, "Wow, what a bitch." I tried not to laugh. Damn, I loved that woman, and I loved that I knew what she was thinking without her saying a word. The French woman nodded. "Press floor 35, please." Almost the penthouse, of course. When the doors opened on the 24th floor, Abby and I stepped out onto the ornate carpet, a bit lost, doing the search walk that people always do when looking for their hotel room. Finally, at the end of the hall, Abby inserted her key card and pulled it out quickly. The door clicked. The light turned green. We were in. Abby flipped on the light and pulled her purse over her head, tossing it onto the king-size bed. She smiled at me. "This is nice." I let go of the bag handle, letting it topple over, and then took Abby into my arms. "That's it. We're here. When we sleep in that bed later, we're going to be husband and wife." Abby looked into my eyes, deep and thoughtful, and then cupped one side of my face. A corner of her mouth turned up. "We sure will." I couldn't begin to imagine what thoughts were swirling behind her beautiful gray eyes, because almost immediately that thoughtful look disappeared. She rose up on the balls of her feet and pecked me on the mouth. "What time is the wedding?"
"Abby." 3 hours? I kept my muscles relaxed, even though my entire body wanted to tense up. We were wasting too much time, and I had no way to explain to Travis why I needed to get it over with. Get it over with? Is that how I really felt about it? Maybe it wasn't just that Travis needed a plausible alibi. Maybe I was afraid I would chicken out if there was too much time to think about what we were doing. "Yeah," Travis said. "I figured you'd need time to get a dress and your hair done and all that girly shit. Was I wrong?" No, it's fine. I guess I was just thinking we'd get here and just go. But you're right. We're not going to the Red, Pidge. We're getting married. I know it's not in a church, but I figured we'd..." "Yeah." I shook my head and closed my eyes for a second, and then looked at him. "Yes, you're right. I'm sorry. I'll go downstairs, find something white, and then I'll come back here and get ready. If I can't find something here, I'll go to Crystal's. There are more shops there." Travis walked toward me, stopping just a few inches away. He watched me for several moments, long enough to make me squirm. "Tell me," he said softly. No matter how I tried to explain it away, he knew me well enough to know, poker face or not, that I was hiding something from him. "I think what you're reading is exhaustion. I haven't slept in almost 24 hours. He sighed, kissed my forehead, and then went to the mini-fridge. He bent over and then turned, holding up two small cans of Red Bull. "Problem solved." "My fiancé is a genius." He handed me a can and then took me into his arms.
"I like that."
"That I think you're a genius?"
"Being your fiancé."
"Yeah? Don't get used to it. I'll be calling you something different in 3 hours." "I'll like the new name even better." I smiled,
watching Travis open the bathroom door. While you find a dress, I'm going to take another shower, shave, and then try to find something to wear. So you won't be here when I get back? Do you want me to be? It's at the Graceland Chapel, right? I thought we'd just meet there. It'll be kind of cool to see each other at the chapel, just before, dressed and ready to walk down the aisle. You're going to walk around Vegas by yourself for 3 hours? I grew up here, remember? Travis thought for a moment. Isn't Jesse still working as a pit boss? I lifted an eyebrow. I don't know. I haven't talked to him. But even if he was, the only casino I'll be anywhere near is the Bellagio's, and that's just long enough for me to walk through to our room. Travis seemed satisfied with that, and then nodded. Meet you there. He winked at me, and then shut the bathroom door. I grabbed my purse off the bed and the room key card, and after glancing at the bathroom door, picked up Travis's cell phone off the nightstand. Opening his contacts, I pressed on the name I needed, sent the contact information to my phone via text, and then deleted the text message the second it went through. When I set his phone down, the bathroom door opened, and Travis appeared in just a towel. Marriage license? He asked. The chapel will take care of it for an extra fee. Travis nodded, seeming relieved, and then shut the door again. I yanked the room door open and made my way to the elevator, inputting and then calling the new number. Please pick up, I whispered. The elevator opened, revealing a crowd of young women, probably just a little older than me. They were giggling and slurring their words, half of them discussing their night, the others deciding if they should go to bed or just stay up so they wouldn't miss their flight home. Pick up, damn it, I said after the first ring. 3 rings later, voicemail chimed in. You've reached Trent. You know what to do. Ugh, I huffed, letting my hand fall to my thigh. The door opened, and I walked with purpose to the Bellagio shops. After searching through too fancy, too trashy, too much lace, too many beads, and too much of everything, I finally found it. The dress I would wear when I became Mrs. Maddox. It was white, of course, and tea-length. Fairly plain, really, except for the sheer bateau neckline and a white satin ribbon that tied around the waist. I stood in the mirror, letting my eyes study each line in detail. It was beautiful, and I felt beautiful in it. In just a couple of hours, I would be standing next to Travis Maddox, watching his eyes take in every curve of the fabric. I walked along the wall, scanning the numerous veils. After trying on the fourth, I placed it back into its cubby, flustered. A veil was too proper, too innocent. Another display caught my eye, and I walked toward it, letting my fingers run over the different beads, pearls, stones, and metals of various hairpins. They were less delicate, and more me. There were so many on the table, but I kept coming back to one in particular. It had a small silver comb, and the rest of it was just dozens of different size rhinestones that somehow formed a butterfly. Without knowing why, I held it in my hand, sure it was perfect. The shoes were in the back of the store. They didn't have a huge selection. But luckily, I wasn't super picky and chose the first pair of silver strappy heels I saw. 2 straps went over my toes and 2 more around my ankle, with a group of pearls to camouflage the belt. Thankfully, they had size 6 in stock, and I was on to the last thing on my list. Jewelry. I chose a simple but elegant pair of pearl earrings. At the top, where they fastened to my ear, was a small cubic zirconia. Just flashy enough for a special occasion, and a matching necklace. Never in my life had I wanted to stand out. Apparently, even my wedding wouldn't change that for me. I thought about the first time I stood in front of Travis. He was sweaty, shirtless, and panting, and I was covered in Merrick Young's blood. That was just 6 months ago, and now we're getting married, and I'm 19. I'm only 19. What the fuck am I doing? I stood at the register, watching the receipt being printed out for the dress, shoes, hairpin, and jewelry, trying not to hyperventilate. The redhead behind the counter tore off the receipt and handed it to me with a smile. It's a gorgeous dress. Nice choice. Thank you, I said. I wasn't sure if I smiled back or not. Suddenly dazed, I walked away, holding the bag against my chest. After a quick stop into the jewelry store for a black titanium wedding ring for Travis, I glanced at my phone and then tossed it back into my purse. I was making good time. When I walked into the casino, my purse began to vibrate. I placed the bag between my legs and reached for it. After two rings, my searching fingers grew desperate, clawing and shoving everything to the side to get to the phone in time. Hello? I screeched. Trent? Abby, is everything okay? Yeah, I breathed as I sat on the floor against the side of the closest slot machine. We're fine. How are you? I've been sitting with Cammy. She's pretty upset about the fire. She lost some of her regulars. Oh God, Trent, I'm so sorry. I can't believe it. It doesn't seem real, I said, my throat feeling tight. There were so many. Their parents probably don't even know yet. I held my hand to my face. Yeah. He sighed, sounding tired. It's like a war zone down there. What's that noise? Are you in an arcade? He sounded disgusted, as if he already knew the answer, and he couldn't believe we were that insensitive. What? I said. God, no! We hopped on a flight to Vegas. What? He said, incensed. Or maybe just confused. I couldn't be sure. He was excitable. I cringed at the disapproval in his voice, knowing it was just the beginning. I had an objective. I had to set my feelings aside as best I could until I achieved what I came for. Just listen. It's important. I don't have a lot of time, and I need your help. Okay. With what? Don't talk. Just listen. Promise? Abby, stop playing. Just fucking tell me. There were a lot of people at the fight last night. A lot of people died. Someone has got to go to prison for it. You thinking it's gonna be Travis? Him and Adam, yeah. Maybe John Savage, and anyone else they think coordinated it. Thank God Shepley wasn't in town. What do we do? I ask Travis to marry me. Okay. How the hell is that going to help him? We're in Vegas. Maybe if we can prove we were off getting married a few hours later, even if a few dozen drunken frat boys testify that he was at the fight, it will sound just crazy enough to create reasonable doubt. Abby, he sighed. A sob caught in my throat. Don't say it. If you don't think it'll work, just don't tell me, okay? It was all I could think of, and if he finds out why I'm doing this, he won't do it. Of course he won't. Abby, I know you're afraid, but this is crazy. You can't marry him to keep him out of trouble. This won't work anyway. You didn't leave until after the fight. I said not to say that. I'm sorry. He wouldn't want you to do this either. He would want you to marry him because you want to. If he ever found out, it'd break his heart. Don't be sorry, Trent. It's going to work. At least it will give him a chance. It's a chance, right? Better odds than he had. I guess, he said, sounding defeated. I sighed, and then nodded, covering my mouth with my free hand. Tears blurred my vision, making a kaleidoscope out of the casino floor. A chance was better than nothing. Congratulations, he said.
Congrats,
Cammy said in the background. Her voice sounded tired and hoarse, even though I was sure she was sincere. Thank you. Keep me updated. Let me know if they come sniffing around the house, or if you hear anything about an investigation. Will do. And it's really fucking weird that our baby brother is the first to get married. I laughed once. Get over it. Fuck off. And I love you. Love you too, Trent. I held the phone in my lap with both hands, watching the people walking by stare at me. They were obviously wondering why I was sitting on the floor, but not enough to ask. I stood up, picked up my purse and bag, and inhaled a deep breath. Here comes the bride, I said, taking my first steps.
Chapter 5. Caught. Travis. I dried off, brushed my teeth, and slipped on a t-shirt and shorts, and then my Nikes. Ready. Damn, it was good to be a man. I couldn't imagine having to blow-dry my hair for half an hour, and then burn it with whatever handheld metal hot iron I could find, and then spend 15 to 20 minutes getting my makeup just right before finally getting dressed. Key, wallet, phone, out the door. Abby had said there were shops downstairs, but she hinted strongly that we shouldn't see each other until the wedding, so I headed for the Strip. Even when in a hurry, if the Bellagio fountains are dancing to the music, it is un-American not to stop and stand in awe. I lit a cigarette and puffed on it, resting my arms on a large concrete ledge that lined the viewing platform. Watching the water sway and spray to the music reminded me of the last time I was there, standing with Shepley while Abby efficiently kicked the asses of 4 or 5 poker veterans. Shepley. Damn, I was so glad he wasn't at that fight. If I'd have lost him, or if he'd lost America, I'm not sure Abby and I would have been here. A loss like that would change the whole dynamic of our friendships. Shepley couldn't be around Abby and me without America, and America couldn't be around us without Shepley. Abby couldn't not be around America. If they hadn't decided to stay with his parents over spring break, I could be suffering the loss of Shepley instead of preparing for our wedding. Thoughts of calling Uncle Jack and Aunt Dina with news of their only son's death made a cold shiver crawl down my spine. I shook the thought away as I remembered the moment before I called my dad's phone, standing in front of Keaton, the smoke billowing out of the windows. Some of the firefighters were holding the hose to pour water inside. Others were bringing out survivors. I remembered what it felt like, knowing that I was going to have to tell my dad that Trent was missing and probably dead. How my brother had run the wrong way in the confusion, and Abby and I were standing outside without him. Thoughts of what that would have done to my dad, to our entire family, made me feel sick to my stomach. Dad was the strongest man I knew, but he couldn't take losing anyone else. My dad and Jack ran our town when they were in high school. They were the first generation of badass Maddox brothers. In college towns, the locals either started fights or were picked on. Jim and Jack Maddox never experienced the latter, and even met and married the only two girls at their college that could handle them, Dina and Diane Hempfling. Yes, sisters, making Shepley and me double cousins. It was probably just as well that Jack and Dina stopped at one, with Mom having 5 unruly boys. Statistically, our family was due for a girl, and I'm not sure the world could handle a female Maddox. All the fight and anger plus estrogen? Everyone would die. When Shepley was born, Uncle Jack settled down. Shepley was a Maddox, but he had his mother's temperament. Thomas, Tyler, Taylor, Trenton, and I all had short fuses like our dad, but Shepley was calm. We were the best of friends. He was a brother who lived in a different house. He pretty much was, but he looked more like Thomas than the rest of us. We all shared the same DNA. The fountain died down and I walked away, seeing the sign for crystals. If I could get in and out of there quick, maybe Abby would still be in the Bellagio shops and wouldn't see me. I picked up the pace, dodging the extremely drunk and tired tourists. One short escalator ride and a bridge later, I was inside the story's tall shopping center. It had glass rectangles displaying colorful water tornadoes, high-end shops, and the same odd range of people. Families to strippers. Only in Vegas. I popped in and out of one suit shop without any luck, and then walked until I hit a Tom Ford store. In 10 minutes, I had found and tried on the perfect gray suit, but had trouble finding it.